coming up to 28 minutes past 9 every time, every year, every January, all of us don't know what to do. We go to the neighbors, we borrow, we go to loan sharks, we go to banks, all sorts of things, because somewhere, somehow, there's mistakes we make in trying to work out our finances. And Olivier Barbeau, managing partner of at accounting and advisory firm Moore Stevens, joins us to help us navigate through this very challenging time of the year. Olivier, good morning. Compliments of 2017.
Good morning, Wanda, and compliments to you and to your listeners.
Are you well, sir?
Yes, very good, thank you.
Looking
forward to 2017.
You're going to be busy if you're not busy already.
That's correct, absolutely.
Yeah. Many of us forget some of these six steps that we'd like you to educate us on.
Yep.
Why is that?
You know, I think we often get caught up in New Year's resolutions around going to the gym and eating healthily and all of those things. But we forget the really important bit behind it, and that is, how do I manage my finances and how do I make sure that come this time next year, 2018, that I'm in a better financial position than I am right now? Managing your finances is a very important part of your life, and I think many of us don't give it the attention that it really deserves. And sometimes it's really basic stuff, and it all starts off, Mandla, with a very basic plan, and that is to say, well, what is my financial plan? What are my financial goals for 2017? And we boil that down to a very simple thing called the budget, and say, these are the incomings. These are the monies I expect to receive, and these are the expenses that I'm going to have. And how do I balance what I'm going to receive versus what I'm going to pay out? So starting out with a really basic thing like a budget, and that is the master plan behind it. And unfortunately, it's not something that we're all taught from an early age, but if we have the opportunity, certainly something that we should be teaching ourselves as soon as possible and our children as soon as possible.
Exposing all of us that we don't make time to have meetings with financial advisors like yourselves.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if you've got an illness, you approach your doctor for some for some medical advice. If you've got a sore tooth,
yes,
you go to the dentist for his advice. And equally, if you've got some financial issues, you should be approaching a professional to guide you through it. So we've created what we think are a few basic steps that everybody should be doing at this time of the year. And the first thing, as I said, is you start off with your budget. How do I balance my incomings with my outgoings? That's the first bit. It sounds quite daunting, and I think it's something that we avoid doing because it's not a pleasant thing to do.
Yeah.
But it is important for you to understand what your financial position looks like if you want to make sure that come 2018, you're in a better position than you were in 2017. And the example we always use is that the money is coming in. Those are the fruits that come from a tree. And we have a limited amount of fruit that comes off the tree.
Yes.
What we want to do with the budget is make sure that we've taken only the right amount of fruit off that tree so that we can create a bigger tree for next year so that we have more that we can use for the following year.
So can we budget up or down, Oliver? Because sometimes I find people saying, hey, I had to downgrade my car, those who can upgrade and all of that. So we can budget either way, up or down?
Of course we can. Obviously, if you can budget up, then you're in a very fortunate position.
Yeah.
That your outgoings are lower than what you had thought originally. But not everybody's going to be in that position. And I think, you know, financially, 2017 is going to be a difficult year. We thought that 2016 was a difficult year. But I think 2017 is likely to be even more difficult. I think there's going to be pressure on things like the petrol prices and things like that.
Yes.
And so what we always encourage people to do is to say, okay, with the resources that I do have, how am I going to spend that wisely? And we say, how do we spend it so that we spend it on ourselves, that we benefit from that expenditure? Things like making sure that I've paid down my debt as much as possible. Because debt is something that erodes into our budget. It erodes the amount of money that we have to spend on other things. So we always encourage people, however much that you can save, save whatever you can and go and settle whatever debt that you have around, and settle the expensive debt. At this time of the year, Mandla, you know, we've gone through the December period, the festive period. Typically, people have overindulged.
Yep.
Maybe you've overspent a little bit, and you've incurred some money on your some debt on your credit card. Credit card debt can be very, very expensive. So encourage people to settle that credit card debt as fast as they can. That will help them through the rest of the year, rather than incurring the big interest bills that accumulate on credit card debt. The other debts that one should have a look at settling, perhaps your motor car. Perhaps you've got a short-term loan. Those are also very expensive debts. Try and extinguish those wherever possible. So those are nice and simple things to do. For those of us that you talked about, we've got a bit more in the budget this year than we had last year.
Yes.
For those of us that are in that fortunate position, then how do we take advantage of that little bit extra that we've got? For me, one of the nice things to look at is coming towards the end of February, the end of the personal tax year, the Minister of Finance has given us a nice little incentive for those of us who want to save a little bit extra by saying, if I put some money into a retirement annuity fund before the end of February, then I get a tax deduction for that contribution towards the retirement fund.
Hang on there, Oliver. If, say, for my retirement, I pay, let's say, 2,000 rand every month, I have a debit order to that effect,
yes,
and I come into some money and I can,
yes,
spare 5 or 10,
yes,
can I take then that lump sum, talk to the company that oversees my retirement and say, I want to put this in, but it won't disturb my regular 2,000 rand. Is that the situation?
Correct.
Ah.
So it's just a nice little way of taking that money. Maybe you've still got a little bit of you're in the fortunate position, Mandla, you've still got a little bit of your December bonus,
yes,
around. Take a little bit of that money and say, put that into my retirement fund. Now, I'm not, the temptation of it being in my bank account is now gone. I'm not going to go and spend it on something that I shouldn't really be spending it on, but I've spent it on myself, I've spent it on my retirement, and I put it in there. We did a quick little calculation that said that if I was able to put in 5,000 rand a month extra per year into the retirement annuity fund,
yes,
and I did that for 20 years, I would be better off to the tune of 230,000 rand at the end of that.
That's not shabby.
That's not shabby at all. We talk about making the tree a lot bigger.
Yes.
That's certainly making the tree a lot bigger.
And very colorful, too.
So, you know, those are the things. And then, obviously, you know, when it comes to 2017, is avoiding some of the mistakes or the pitfalls that we made in 2016.
Yeah.
When we were looking at, and the budget is always the go-to place for that. To say, I expect to receive X. I can only then afford to spend so much money on the necessary things, such as food and housing and transport and education and all the important things that I need to have, and avoiding those the temptation items. You know, where, I really, really need that jacket. And I shouldn't afford that jacket, but maybe I really need that jacket, and avoiding those things. And the budget gives us a blueprint that we can work towards as a household. It says, if the money's not in the budget, then we can't afford to go and spend that money.
So we've got to differentiate between wants and needs.
Absolutely.
Now, talk about investments, because some of us invest money and we stick to the initial investment,
yes,
and we don't look at what we need to pay in to offset inflation. We don't look at the final payout, how we help that grow all the time instead of stagnating or going back.
Exactly. So now you're referring to the person that's made that investment contribution and said, okay, well, I've done my bit.
Yes.
I've put something into an investment. But I can't just leave it there. I can't let it just be passive. I need to take an active involvement in what's happening to my money. And I can't assume that what was correct in terms of an investment a year ago or 2 years ago is still correct right now. It's still valid in this current market. So it is important for you to sit down with your investment advisor. We advise at least once a year, maybe twice a year, sitting down with your investment advisor and understanding where your money is invested and understanding what the risks associated with that investment are, and are they still appropriate for my current situation in life? Do they give me the protection that I want? Perhaps when you made initial investments, you might have been more risk-averse, and now you might be less risk-averse, or vice versa. And making sure that that allocation of the investment is appropriate for your current state of life. And that, again, you need professional advice for that. It's not something that you should be doing necessarily all on your own. So make an appointment in this first part of the year and go and sit down with your financial advisor. Share your budget with him. Share your plans. Share your aspirations for the next couple of years with him so that we can make sure that your investment allocation is correct. Because we may well find that there are certain investments that are performing poorly and should not be in your portfolio. And then dumped, they need to be gotten rid of. Or you need to rebalance your portfolio and say, I need a bit more exposure to this industry or a bit less exposure to that industry. Circumstances change. The financial markets are very volatile. And, it would be appropriate for you to discuss that with your financial advisor.
I suppose also we need to ask the right questions, because sometimes we don't ask the right questions and we don't get the information that satisfies us to a point, because we don't keep ourselves informed. And obviously the big thing about beneficiaries on investments, people will put somebody and forget who they put.
Exactly. I mean, we see it often. You took out the original policy, an endowment policy, a life policy, or whatever it is, and perhaps it was before you met your spouse, perhaps it was before you had children, and you've put down a beneficiary there, and we almost forget that those beneficiaries are recorded on those investment policies. So just as you would sit down with your financial advisor and go and say, well, are my asset allocations correct? It is important to sit down and say, well, who are the beneficiaries of these investment policies? What happens if I'm not around? Are my family taken care of? Have my circumstances changed from prior years? And to inform your financial advisor of some of the changes that need to be made. And it's a little bit like preparing a will, but it's a lot more simple than preparing a will. It's literally the forms that need to be completed for these various investment products to make sure that the beneficiaries of these products reflect your wishes at this point in time. It's something simple to do, but it's probably worthwhile doing every time you sit down with your financial advisor.
Yes. Okay?
What is it saying on my beneficiaries? And is that still appropriate? I mean, we touched on Manla just briefly there with the change of beneficiaries, but probably also making sure that I have in place a valid will.
Yes.
Now, look, it's obviously something that we don't like talking about.
Yes.
Death and taxes, as they say. But it is an important part of being a responsible adult, a responsible spouse, a responsible parent. Make sure that you have a valid will in place that reflects your own personal wishes as to what should happen to your assets after your death. What happens to that tree? How's that tree going to be split out amongst your various heirs? And people get daunted with the idea. They don't like discussing it. But it is something that you need to do. We encourage, again, doing it at least once a year. And I can't think of a better time than doing it right now at the start of the year, that you know with peace of mind that is done for the next couple of months.
Some people have this notion that I don't have a lot, I don't have much, so what do I need a will for?
Yeah. Look, I mean, the law obviously caters for the fact that if you die without a will, there's certain things that will automatically take place. And having been in this industry for several years, our experience has been that irrespective of what the value of your assets are, the will leaves a message to your remaining family, your remaining beneficiaries, as to what your wishes were going to be. And it eliminates areas of potential conflict between surviving children or a spouse that remains or other family members. It takes away the uncertainty. And that's the important part of the will. So I wouldn't necessarily be worried about the will only because of how much my assets are.
Yeah.
But I think it's just something for peace of mind.
Let's quickly chat to Riyad, who's calling us from Polokwane. Thanks for calling, Riyad. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks a lot for a great show. Lots of great information.
Thanks for tuning in. Your question, Riyad?
Well, I've got two. One, I'd like to know, is it a good time to be going into the market? Because your guest did say that we can anticipate a lot of volatility in the financial sector, you know, whether that's banks or the stock exchange. I mean, I'm asking this for a number of reasons, because if we look at it at a big picture perspective, right? I mean, a lot of the black empowerment that happened before the 98 crisis. So black people bought into the economy at a bubble rate. But they're still financing those investments at bubble rates, even though the underlying equity has gone down. The same thing happened after 2001 and then after 2008. That's why we don't have Neil and Johnny. So, I mean, is it a good investment, the stock exchange? Because even pension funds, unit trusts, they all go into the same pot. You see, and the price-to-earnings ratios are very high. I mean, we're talking about 22 to 23. That means you're paying 22 times more than the underlying is worth. And you're targeting asset appreciation. Now you're targeting asset appreciation in a volatile market. Is it not better for people to save their money, get and club together, open up their own spaza shop, buy a piece of land, instead of paying the extra fees in a volatile market?
Well, thank you, Riyad, for the call. Please listen on the radio. Oliver?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, very well put there by Riyad. You know, investment decisions are not decisions that one takes lightly. And that's the reason why one would engage with a professional.
Yes.
If one has a look at how investments have performed over an extended period of time, then certainly the equity markets have delivered exceptional returns to investors. But Riyad points to something very important, and that is the timing of one's investment. And that is something that you would discuss one-on-one with your financial advisor. And any investment strategy would deal with a few aspects to it. Equity investments is but one element thereof. Every single financial plan should cater for things like equity investments. It should cater for things like property exposure, cash exposure. We talk about a balanced portfolio, a balanced view on where my assets are, such that I'm not exposed entirely to the vagaries of the market, that I buy at specific points and therefore end up running the risk, like we had said, of buying at a bubble price. That you do this in a managed basis over time with the assistance of your advisor. And the other point which we have made, which is very important, is that and we touched on it a little bit earlier, Monday, which was use the opportunity to go and, if you have surplus cash, to go and settle any debt that you might have.
Yes.
You know, that's going to give you a return that very few investments are going to be able to replicate.
You know, because of time, Oliver, I wish we had more time. Please, let's recap on the topping up of your retirement. You said the benefits can only, you need to do this before the end of February this year.
Yes, exactly. So as individuals, we have a February year end, a February tax year, and we're entitled to go and top up our retirement annuities or make additional contributions. There are various limitations in place as to how much one can do. But if one takes a very simple amount and said, every month I'm making a contribution to it, and hopefully you are contributing towards some sort of retirement plan.
Yes.
And if I've got that little bit extra, go and speak to my advisor and say, can I make a once-off contribution into my retirement annuity? That has multiple benefits. The benefits, obviously, saying I'm taking the cash out of my current resources and I'm putting them into a long-term investment where I'll deliver some sort of return and remove the temptation of spending that money. The second is that because I'm putting it into a retirement annuity fund, I'm in fact getting a tax benefit for it as well. I'm able to claim that additional contribution as a deduction against my taxable income. So in fact, the state, SARS, are contributing a little bit towards your retirement annuity fund. It's not often that you get something back from the revenue services. Here's a very simple example to do that.
Wow. Oliver, Thank you for actually bringing that light bulb moment. Obviously, also, yeah, you would advise people to look at donating to charity. There's also a tax benefit for that.
Yes, of course. And I think, you know, in South Africa, we have various social challenges that we can't ignore. Being involved in certain child charities myself, I mean, it's really close to my heart, is during this time of year, if we find that we're in a position where we are able to perhaps give benefits to other people, please consider those charities who at this time of year find cash flow extremely difficult. And there again, there's another opportunity for a tax deduction. If you give donations to reputable charities, those that are approved by the receiver of revenue, then you get what's called a Section 18A certificate for that donation. And if you're in possession of that 18A certificate, you can claim that donation against your taxable income.
Well, Oliver, thank you for the info. Much appreciated. As you said, this is a sobering subject, but it's a very good subject because if you start doing the sober stuff, you can enjoy the rest of the year.
Exactly right. Thanks, Mandla. Thanks very much.
Thank you for joining us.
You and much listeners, all the best for 2017.
You too, Zay. We will be knocking on your door on Monday. That's for sure. Many thanks. That's Oliver Babo. He is the managing partner of accounting firm and advisory, accounting and advisory firm, Moore Stevens. So basically, the advice is talk to your financial advisor as soon as possible.